Hey, it's Weezo. You're listening to Talk Today's Top and Trendy Technology Topics every Tuesday and Thursday with Adam Lepp, the computer guy, between 2:13 p.m. and 3 right here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
And a very good, pleasant, and summery Thursday afternoon to you. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, as we talk today's top and trendy technology topics on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. We had Charlie Evers receive a special award for his very long career in broadcasting. Hopefully you had a chance to hear that on the air, but if not, we have all kinds of stuff posted on our Facebook page, and Charlie's show will also be in the broadcasting archives of our website at WWGH1071.com. And tomorrow, Lulu Roman from Hee Haw, show that I enjoyed watching as a youngster, comedy variety, cool show with music, dancing, and of course lots of surprises and lots of very talented people. She'll be live in the studio, live in Marion, talking about her career and her book and many other fine topics. Definitely want to catch that program. We'll be posting lots of pictures, too, and thoughts and memories of this very special visit. So be sure to make time to listen tomorrow. Your ears and your brain will, of course, thank you very much. But on this program, we talk today's top and trendy technology topics. Smartphones, not so smartphones, video games, automation, viruses, malware, ways to make your computer safer, easier to use, and obviously more reliable. I provide my opinions, sometimes reviews, and opinions from experts around the globe who know their stuff about technology. New segment with Jared Travis will be airing during the program. He'll be talking about video games. He will be on regularly with that very same topic. Some interesting new releases coming out later in the year as we approach the holiday season. Again, you can always send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think about the show. Suggestions for topics, complaints, recommendations, all welcome. Adam at WWGH1071.com. So what happened last year, 2018? A study estimates that Google got $4.7 billion from news content. And that study has drawn widespread criticism. Is it fake news, real news, or maybe something in between, like often seems to be the case? According to the News Media Alliance, it's actually higher. The News Industry Trade Group, News Media Alliance, released the study recently, and they said it's because the estimate doesn't take into account Google's advertising revenue from publishers and data collected from news content. The actual value of news content to Google is difficult to quantify because of the ways that it uses news to drive traffic, as well as develop its products and entrench its dominant position. According to the study, which strategy and economics consulting firm Keystone Strategy carried out for the News Media Alliance. In addition to using news content for product development, like training its artificial intelligence services, Google tailors its products, ramps up its use of news to keep users in the Google ecosystem, according to the study. The CEO of the News Media Alliance, David Chavern, said news publishers need to continue to invest in quality journalism, and they can't do that if the platforms take what they want without paying for it. He said information wants to be free, but reporters need to be paid. That's always good to get paid, isn't it? One of the key assumptions underlying the $4.7 billion number, that news is worth $100 million to Google, is flawed, according to critics. The study relies on weak back-of-the-envelope calculations, said Russell Newman, an assistant professor in the Liberal Arts and Interdisciplinary Studies Department at Emerson College in Boston. He said, "In my world, This wouldn't have stood up to peer review by any stretch. It's a bit ridiculous. Dan Kennedy, professor at the School of Journalism at the Northeastern University, said, "The value of news to Google is hard to quantify. I thought it was a little dubious based on the fact that they tried to come up with an exact figure, when an exact figure isn't something that you can calculate." The study found that both Facebook and Google are dependent on news content. He said, "My sense is that Google is dependent on news content to some extent, but Facebook is not. So lumping them together seemed like a questionable proposition." Now, in its defense, Google told The Guardian that it collaborates with and supports news publishers worldwide, and that its news and search features have delivered more than 10 billion clicks to publishers' sites, hence driving subscriptions and ad revenue. Google says the study is based on back-of-the-envelope calculations and is inaccurate. The NMA said Google has stated that there are back-of-the-envelope computations without offering a view into what's actually in the envelope. The news industry has been asking for these numbers for years. It's incumbent upon Google to be transparent about their income derived from news. So, yeah, how much does Google make from news, being a news outlet of sorts? Well, over $4 billion, but people are saying that that's actually low. It's more than that. In fact, we call upon Google to share this data on their quarterly reports and discuss this on their earnings calls. Doing so would be in the interest of ensuring vibrant democracies and free press around the world. Critics also have lambasted a New York Times report on its findings, published the day before this Google study was released. Dan Gilmore is a professor at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Arizona State. "No kidding," tweeted back Aaron Pilhofer, chair of journalism innovation at Temple in Philadelphia. That's where my mom went and where Bill Cosby went. So anybody at Temple is probably a very smart cookie. And she was also a journalism major, by the way, although, of course, it was quite a long time ago. Professor Newman said a study appeared and they took it at face value. It was pretty weak reporting. The Times is not making any apologies for the story. The Times said it's fair and accurate. It made clear that this $4.7 billion, again, what Google supposedly made from its news ventures last year, is the result of a study by News Media Alliance, a nonprofit organization. And this is according to the New York Times. "We go on to call the $4.7 billion figure an estimate and made sure to explain to our readers how this group came up with that number. We also disclose early and explicitly the relationship between the Times and the Alliance." The release of the study was a political move by the National Media Alliance, the NMA, which was scheduled to testify recently on a bill before Congress to give news publishers a 4-year antitrust exemption, during which they could collectively bargain with the owners of online platforms over revenue splitting. And that comes from John Carroll, a media analyst in Boston. He said this estimate that the newspaper association came up with is a tool for them to convince the government that newspapers need some kind of relief, that they've been put at a significant financial disadvantage because of Google. The question is whether the newspaper industry should get the government to do anything at all. There's a school of thought that says journalists do not want to let the government into their house for any reason, because however it might start out, once the government is inside your house, eventually they are going to kick off their shoes, make a bologna sandwich, and occupy your living room couch. That's the last thing journalists need. Whether Google is at fault for the news industry's woes is questionable. You can argue that the Newspaper Association has made its bed at this point by giving content away for free and training people to think that digital content should be free. and by doing a bad job of convincing people that what newspapers produce is unique enough and valuable enough that they should pay for it. So Google, making a few billion dollars from being a news outlet of sorts, and not surprisingly, a little bit of controversy. But what would life in the IT world be without a little bit of controversy? Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice-weekly radio program called the Adam the Computer Guy Show, here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. What else is going on in the world of technology? Well, YouTube recently demonetized, that's a good word, demonetized the account of right-wing commentator Steven Crowder following widespread indignation over its initial response to his attacks on Vox host Carlos Maza. So why did that happen? Well, for years, Crowder has attacked Maza, host of Vox's Strike Through series. Crowder's homophobic and racist comments often spurred mass social media attacks and other abuse against Maza. Maza repeatedly flagged Crowder's vitriolic YouTube videos, but his reports apparently went unheeded until last month, May, when he posted a tweet that went viral. YouTube responded with a tweet stating that an in-depth review of Crowder's flagged videos found language, quote, that was clearly hurtful, but it went on to say that, quote, the videos, as posted, don't violate our policies. As an open platform, YouTube said it's crucial for us to allow everyone to express their opinions within the scope of our policies. Opinions can be deeply offensive, but if they don't violate our policies, they'll remain on our site. YouTube does not endorse or support the viewpoints expressed in videos on its platform. It did, however, offer to explain its decision on background to The Verge, which is owned by Vox Media, but chief editor Nilay Patel turned down the offer because YouTube would not go on the record. Dan Goldstein, a president of Page One Solutions, said, I believe that YouTube missed an opportunity here to be more transparent in the way it interprets and enforces its stated policies. Like other social media platforms, YouTube has an obligation to clearly state its policies on harassment and privacy. Once stated, it must enforce them or users won't respect the boundaries. YouTube did shut the door on further action, tweeting, there are other aspects of the channel that we are still evaluating. We'll be in touch with any further updates. So what exactly is involved with YouTube's harassment and cyberbullying policy? It bans content or behavior intended to maliciously harass, threaten, or bully others. For example, revealing somebody's personal information, although posting widely available public info, like a public official's office phone number, is okay. Also, content deliberately posted to humiliate someone, content that makes hurtful and negative personal comments or videos about another person, content that incites others to harass or threaten individuals on or off YouTube, sexualizing or degrading an individual who is engaged or present in an otherwise non-sexual context. So those things, quite understandably, are a no-no for YouTube. YouTube will remove content promoting violence or hatred against individuals or groups based on various attributes, including ethnicity, gender identity, nationality, race, and sexual orientation. Now, Crowder's attacks on Maza appear to have breached both policies. Michael Jude, some we quote him often, he's from Straightcast, Frost and Sullivan, a very smart dude, Michael Jude, he said, however, what one person considers hurtful, another might think of as spirited debate. And that's true. There are There are not all black and white issues. A lot of questionable decisions about, is it harassment? Is it an opinion? Is it hate speech? Depends how you look at it, although many times it is obvious. Michael Jude said YouTube should define a standard that satisfies everybody, but I don't think that's possible given the subjective nature of what they're attempting to control. And not, again, that's understandable. How you look at it, who said it, history of what this person has said, it's not quite as simple as you might think. Melissa Dunphy, a YouTube user who goes by the handle Mormolike, M-O-R-M-O-L-Y-K-E, said, your policies are, not a word I can say on the radio, but it starts with a B and has eight letters. Calling someone Lispy Sprite is harassment, tweeted Julian Nader Saliani, saying you're being given a free pass as a crappy writer because you're gay is harassment. Calling someone Little Queer is harassment. Calling someone Mr. Gay Vox is harassment. And that's from Twitter user Julian Nader Saliani, who goes by the handle Saliani J. Media stories about YouTube's initial response were overwhelmingly negative. Crowder posted what he called an apology on YouTube, but he used the video to level a broad round of insults against numerous targets, couched in disingenuous, poker-faced sarcasm. YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki said earlier this year, YouTube updated its policies to a simpler and more transparent system because of complaints from creators that the community guidelines strike system felt inconsistent and confusing. Every creator would get a one-time warning, providing the opportunity to learn about YouTube's policies before being penalized. YouTube tweeted that it had suspended the monetization of Crowder's channel because a pattern of egregious actions has harmed the broader community and is against our YouTube partner program policies. And Michael Jude, again, an expert from Straightcast Frost and Sullivan, said, demonetizing Crowder's channel was a subjective call, likely driven by an assessment of the political situation. Many conservative organizations regard YouTube as being liberal and intolerant of conservative views. Perhaps this was a way for YouTube to demonstrate that it tolerates both sides. Users and advertisers who object to YouTube's approach can simply vote with their feet. Ultimately, these companies will only change if failure to change will negatively impact their finances. Yes, vote with your feet and your mouth and your keyboard. Again, take your business, take your views elsewhere. It's part of the free enterprise that the internet is so much founded on, and I would tend to agree. And sometimes what's hate speech, what is a strong opinion, isn't quite so simple, but as some of those users mentioned, it can be obvious. What I say, form your own opinion. Much more fun that way, and certainly you learn something and stimulate conversation for anything that may happen in the future. Yeah, Adam Lepp here, talking about the future, the past, and almost anything else on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. A twice-weekly feature here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. What else is going on in the world of technology? So much to talk about. So many things occurring in our fine earth that we call home. Apple has dangled the next versions of iOS, macOS, and watchOS before developers' eyes at a recent Worldwide Developers Conference in San Jose. We've talked about some updates for Apple recently, but I got some new news for you. In this new round of operating system upgrades, Apple seems focused on improvements. Ross Rubin from Reticle Research in New York City said, they are polishing a number of aspects of the operating systems. They're breaking out the iPad OS into its own code base and continuing a path toward autonomy for Watch OS. Tuong Nguyen from Gartner, Stamford, Connecticut, a research and advisory company, said, "More than anything else, Apple has been about the user experience. A strong part of that was technological innovation. This year it was about improvements and adopted features like swipe, dark mode, and desktop browsing that have existed on other platforms for quite some time. A lot of iOS 13 is just playing catch-up with Android, which was way ahead of Apple in certain areas," according to Bob O'Donnell from Technalysis Research, a technology market research and consulting firm in Foster City, California. He said it was great to see the improvements in Maps, but that was really playing catch-up. Among the changes coming to the next version of Apple's iOS mobile operating system is an improved Maps app. It has broader road coverage, better pedestrian data, more precise addresses, and more detailed land cover, as well as a new look-around feature that allows you to experience a location at street level. Charles King from Pundit, in California, a technology consultant, we also quote him often, said, "For years, Apple Maps has lagged significantly behind Google Maps in terms of features, as well as functions and local details. The new enhancements discussed at the developers' conference should be a welcome relief to both Apple developers and customers. Apple has added a dark mode in iOS 13 also. It's especially useful in low-light conditions. What's more, Apple has opened it up to developers so they can use it in other apps, in their own apps. Embracing dark mode across its platforms could be an indicator of where Apple is headed with its display technology," according to Wayne Lamb from IHS Market, a research analysis and advisory firm in London, and they analyze mobile devices and networks, so they should know what they're talking about. He said if they're going to go with dark mode, the best type of display is going to be an OLED display. So it appears that their 2019 product line will be all OLED. But of course, we will find out. Apple also beefed up photo apps in the new operating system. The photo software uses an onboard machine learning to curate a photo collection, making it easier to relive moments by day, month, or year. Photo editing tools are more accessible, and they incorporate sliders for application of effects. In addition, users can apply editing effects to video. Portrait mode is accessible directly in the camera app. New features let you move your light source in and out on a subject to change the ambiance of a shot. There's also a high-key mono effect for creating distinctive monochromatic portraits. iOS 13 will come with a new way to sign on to apps and websites. Instead of using a social ID from Facebook or Google, you can use your Apple credentials to sign in. The new offering, called Sign In with Apple, lets you use a biometric face or fingerprint to log in to an app or site. The feature has two-factor authentication built in for an additional layer of security. Apple has announced a new iOS-based operating system for the iPad. Charles King said the new iPad operating system and related features will be a boon to iPad users, especially those who depend on the device for productivity applications. The new features and functions will also allow the iPad to compete more effectively against commercial laptops, a market that Apple desperately needs to crack. Wayne Lamb from IHS Markit said, "For years, the iPad has been emulating the user interaction of the iPhone. But with features like multi-windowing and the use of keyboards and mice, the platform is becoming more sophisticated. Most surprising of all was a feature buried in the accessibility settings, support for wired or Bluetooth mouse devices. So talking about some improvements in the new Mac operating systems. What wasn't mentioned on stage, again, at a developers conference recently, where Apple debuted their upcoming new and exciting operating systems. Apple and supporters have reportedly tried to downplay the importance of including support for Bluetooth and wired mice and trackballs and similar pointing devices. But taken in concert with these other new iPad operating system features, it seems obvious that Apple is finally coming to grips with the iPad's greatest shortcomings, all related to its lack of common, valuable functions that PC owners enjoy every day. So making an iPad function in ways that are like an Android tablet, which I think is an excellent idea. And iPad users can look forward to that with the new version of the iPad operating system. Also, Apple departed from previous naming conventions with the next release of the Mac OS for the regular Mac desktop computers. It's called Catalina. It'll be able to run iOS apps for like an iPhone. You can run those on a desktop. And that's thanks to Project Catalyst, formerly known as Marzipan. The codenamed Marzipan tool makes it easier to port iOS apps onto the Mac, which allows developers to sell on iOS and Mac app stores without reconfiguring their apps. It's according to an analyst, Gene Munster. Jack Gold, an IT advisor in Northborough, Massachusetts, said, "Catalyst is pretty cool. It's going to get a lot of interest because there's a lot of iOS apps out there that people want to run on other devices. With Catalina, Apple is retiring iTunes and replacing it with three new apps for music, podcasts, and TV shows and movies. Apple has also added a feature called Sidecar that lets you use an iPad as a second display or a drawing tablet." Apple also showed the developers' conference crowd a new voice control app for Catalina that lets users who are unable to operate a computer with traditional devices to control it with their voice through a system of labels and grids. Users can interact with virtually any app using comprehensive navigation tools. Pretty cool. Just talk to your computer. It goes beyond the voice recognition that I use on my phone. Definitely a important tool for those who might have a handicap that wouldn't let them type. I think that's a good thing to do. With the next version of Watch OS, an operating system for the Apple Watches, Apple Watch will get its own app store, and users will be able to download apps without the assistance of the iPhone. The ability to get apps separately is a big deal. It's the first sign of making the watch independent completely and potentially have it work with other platforms. A separate watch operating system is thought to be good for the watch's ecosystem also. The use cases for the watch have long been debated, due in part to consumers not being aware of the available Watch OS apps. We believe an app store on the watch will increase consumer awareness. Increasing awareness will drive developers to create more and useful watch-based apps, and the watch should become more useful over time. This should have the small effect of increasing demand for Apple Watch, which now accounts for about 5% of Apple's revenue. Apple has announced some new apps for the watch operating system, including cycle tracking, which allows women to log important information about their menstrual cycles, and Noise, an app that tracks sound levels that could be damaging to a user's hearing. So exciting stuff coming with the new versions of the Apple operating systems. And we cover that stuff here on The Talking Place, right here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. WWGH Radio. Here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program, we're going to have a new segment that will periodically be aired as part of this broadcasting extravaganza. Still kind to think of a name for this segment, but I think we'll just call it Video Game Talk. And I'm not really an expert on modern video games. I'm very good on Pac-Man and Missile Command and that stuff I played in the 80s. So I'm going to bring in someone who is an expert. He will be our main commentator, and his name is Jared Travis. No relation to Andy Travis from WKRP, but interestingly, they're both from the Cincinnati area. And Jared Travis is someone who knows a lot about video games. He's going to talk about some of his favorites and maybe some trends in the video games. Let's see if I have properly, for this debut on the station of our video game commentator here on the Adam the Computer Guy program, Jared Travis, let's see if I have properly patched in the cables, properly duct taped the wires, and crossed my fingers a couple times. On this debut program, Jared, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing fine, Adam. How are you?
Oh, fairly fantastic for the most part. We appreciate you being on the segment. Now, you're a little younger than I am. Of course, most people are younger than I am, and you're quite an expert on video games, some of the current trends, some of the current games. Maybe, you know, holiday season is rapidly approaching, so maybe some ideas for the holidays, maybe back-to-school gifts for some of our listeners who are into gaming, both on a computer or on an Xbox or PS3 or PS4. Before we go into some of the current games you may want to talk about on this segment, Jared, what is your favorite video game console? Are you an Xbox guy? Do you like the PlayStations? Do you like just playing a game on your computer? And what is your favorite? And what do you think may bode for the future, say 3 or 4 years down the road?
Well, I am a wide variety type guy. I love anything from PC to Xbox, but mainly Xbox for right now. As far as like games go, I'm more of a first-person shooter, but I do dive into some RPGs every now and then. Currently, I'm playing Fallout 4. Sooner down the line, I'll be playing Skyrim, and
so you're
a little less.
You're an Xbox kind of a guy.
Yes.
Do you think, again, down the road, will Xbox still be your favorite, be the favorite of people that have some of the same tastes as yourself? Or maybe will there be a new PlayStation that may end up surpassing the usefulness of the Xbox? Or you're kind of cemented with your favorite for the time being?
Well, Microsoft will always hold a place in my heart, so Xbox will still be my thing later on down the road. I have played multiple consoles, ranging from the PS4 to the Xbox One to even a PC, but the Xbox is still hands down my favorite.
So you feel that there are qualities of the Xbox that are superior. Again, Microsoft being, you know, the leader in software development, and you know, Sony, certainly they have a lot of smart people working there, but again, I still think of them as more of a stereo and TV company. But you know, nowadays in 2019, you know, what is that line between what's an audio video product, what's a computer, what's something that runs on a microprocessor? Because everything nowadays has some kind of a electronic brain behind it. But yeah, it's a good point. There are certain things that Microsoft can do well, and the fact that they can satisfy the demanding needs of video game enthusiasts like yourself does say quite a bit, that they don't just do the business software and do the operating system. So do you have a favorite video game of all time, Jared? And maybe, you know, based on different age groups, school age, millennial age like yourself, middle age, senior citizen, are there maybe suggestions, if you're new to gaming, suggestions of games that you may want to try just to get the most out of the equipment that you purchase?
It depends on, like, what you're feeling at the moment. Are you an adventurous type person? I grew up playing the Super Nintendo. So, like, everything from Super Mario Bros. 3 to, like, the Atari and Sonic and whatnot. For those who are, like, coming into the gaming scene, obviously I would most likely go with the older consoles. I wouldn't dive into the newer consoles. I would go for, like, the Nintendo 64, the Super Nintendo, and just work your way up, because diving into a lot of high-quality games right off the bat is not for everybody. Like, for the older generations, I would go back and play the Super Nintendo, relive your glory days when you used to love video games and so forth. A lot of people are playing the PC, so it all really depends on, like,
well, bottom line is, Jared, there are video games for everybody, and just because you're a certain age doesn't mean you have to stop playing them. And the universal nature, that's probably what makes the Xbox superior, as Microsoft has products for all ages and people of all interests and all budgets. But if someone in different age groups were to ask for a video game for the holidays or for a birthday present, do you have any suggestions? Again, let's say school age, millennial age, like yourself, you know, middle age, you know, 60 plus. Are there any games you think might be good? Ones that have come out maybe in the last few months.
Well, E3 was a little bit back, and they released a bunch of video games and so forth. Modern Warfare comes out October 25th. And the Call of Duty game seems to be a thing for everybody, young and old. I've seen a lot of older people play the Nintendo Switch with their grandchildren and so forth, and I've seen kids play the Nintendo Switch as well. But in my opinion, for those who are looking into the holiday season, I would recommend picking up Modern Warfare. It's a new game that's coming out October 25th.
So the software companies, they obviously put out their best products toward the end of the year with an eye on the holidays. Plus, again, especially here in Ohio with the four seasons, when it gets colder, you'll spend less time swimming and bike riding, and you'll stay inside and play video games. So there certainly is a reason for the way they do that. But, and we've talked about the Nintendo Switch on the show many, many times, and whatever else is coming up. The bottom line is video games are for everybody. Many are for all ages, but some are kind of focused on certain demographics of people. So those games that you mentioned that are coming out in October, are you personally excited for them? Do you think that they will be good sellers and something that you'll enjoy playing?
Yes, I'm personally excited for this. I've already pre-ordered Modern Warfare, and I'm going to the midnight release at GameStop on Mall Road. But the midnight release is happening everywhere for Modern Warfare. For every GameStop nearby, whether it's in Ohio, it's releasing on midnight, October 25th. I'm personally excited for it. A lot of my friends as well.
So that just about a week before Halloween, you'll be lining up at 11:59 p.m. near the Florence Mall to pick up your very own copy. I remember people used to do that when Windows 95 came out. People would wait online at 12:01 a.m. into the computer store they go to purchase the latest and greatest. And amazing how things don't really change. It's so kind of exciting to be the first person to grab that. Well, we thank you, Jared, for being on this segment. We will have you on regularly to talk about video games, trends, you know, suggestions for people of all ages, and some of your own opinions. Wanted to kind of give an overview. Any parting words for our listeners? Any maybe suggestions for people like yourself that are into video games, or maybe someone who's taking it up as a new hobby?
Yes, it's been a pleasure being on this show, and there, if you're looking into getting into video games, are you looking to watch people play video games so you can get a start into it or see what it's like? I recommend the Sticky Paddle. It's a YouTube channel, and I follow these guys, and they do playthroughs of games like Borderlands and anything in between, so I would rather check them out.
Obviously, like anything you do on a computer, there are lots of resources out there, tips for how to play games, suggestions for what somebody might enjoy playing, and, of course, reviews. And you want to kind of take all the opinions, take all the facts, and decide for yourself. And hopefully not spend too much money, because some of this stuff can get kind of expensive.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much again, Jared, for being with us on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. And again, it's a new segment we're offering about video games and related technology here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. There's a maker in China. They make smartphones, and they are quite smart. They're called Oppo. And what do they have up their sleeve? Well, what they are trying to do is revolutionize the camera in the smartphone. You know, taking selfies, that's one of the big things we do, myself included, with the smartphone. They are looking to put a new selfie camera underneath the glass display. They've posted new images and video of the technology on Twitter and gave a demo at a technology expo recently held in Shanghai. Bottom line is you get a smooth device with no bezel that isn't marred by indentations or protrusions where the cameras are. The touchscreen still works where the camera is located. It'll be invisible during video streaming, as well as web browsing, mobile gaming, and even video calls. But for selfies, a circular animation will activate briefly to indicate where the camera is. So basically, a camera that fits in with a smooth design of the smartphone. Cool stuff, and they are working on it. They've demonstrated it at an expedition in Shanghai. Now, again, the company's called Oppo. They first teased the technology in a video on social media in early June. Then rival phone company Xiaomi posted a video on Twitter saying, "Do you want a sneak peek at the future? Here you go, introducing you to under-display camera technology." Xiaomi's response seems to be an early indication that this technology is being developed by multiple companies. If under-display cameras really work, we may see other phone makers join in. The new technology appears to have some shortcomings. Oppo's VP, Shen Yuren, who also goes by Brian, lamented twice on a social media account that the images taken by the camera aren't as crisp and clear as those taken by a protruding camera. Oppo claimed on Twitter that algorithms would help remove any haze around the camera and touch up the images. The physical home button has been removed in many newer flagship smartphones and replaced with a fingerprint sensor located under the display. Oppo has a history of experimenting with how to make phones more seamless and closer to the pain of glass vision. The company has tried adding a pop-up selfie camera that slides up from the display. It also tried minimizing the notch that people who use an Apple iPhone X are familiar with. Or again, the Apple iPhone 10. I'm still not sure if it's X or it's 10. Of course, X being the Roman numeral for 10, but whatever it is, it's that new expensive and fancy iPhone that we've talked about on the show many times. Now, Oppo didn't give specifics on a timeline for a phone with the under-display selfie camera. There's also no word on whether the rear cameras will be similarly hidden away by glass. And Oppo and Xiaomi did not respond to requests by CNN for any comment on this. So we'll just see what happens. But nice having a seamless design where the selfie camera is actually under the glass without protruding. I think many advantages to that, but they'll work out the bugs, make it function better, and we may see other companies, of course, follow suit, as often happens in the technology industry. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, talking today's top and trendy tech topics on The Talking Place. WWGH Radio.